Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. Got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
I'll move it again. It's going to hit great.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Like, go for it. Go for it, Brian.
Go for it. Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. Welcome to HF Pod 2020. In lieu of today's episode, due to the global pandemic that has taken over the entire world, hence the global nature of the pandemic, we will not be doing a live episode. We are actually going to be doing a past HF Pod episode. So please sit tight and enjoy.
That would actually be pretty entertaining, I bet.
If yeah, we just have any HFPods from like 1995?
What would you guys suggest that people cook while watching a past HFPod episode?
Depends on the episode, really.
A cheese plate, a bowl, for sure.
Obviously. Come on.
A cheese plate, for sure.
A cheese plate, some girl dinner?
Look at that.
Some goo balls.
Is that considered girl dinner?
I think so. It's partially golden. Like some grapes and a few pieces of salami and then like a glass of rosé. I don't know.
I have been served that by
Sounds
a girl.
Good to me. You have? Sure. I have eaten that and I am a girl. So I guess that makes it a girl dinner.
There you go.
Yeah. Maybe some sandwiches. I don't know.
How you guys doing today?
Guys, what the hell is happening?
I don't know, RJ.
Yeah, RJ's having some technical difficulties, but I'm sure it's going to be fine. We're going
to
have
to wear headphones.
He's going to wear
you look
headphones.
Like a professional caveman. Podcaster now.
Yeah.
This is
caveman slash professional podcaster. I guess kind of the same thing.
I don't like any of this right now.
Well,
nothing's working.
So. 2020 was a hard year, I agree.
It really
yes.
was.
Yeah, let's see. This will cheer you up. Let's look back to the year that was 2020.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to throw these headphones across the room, and then we can get started. Ready?
Let's do
All right,
it.
We're yeah. ready.
Should I do that?
Do
Actually,
it.
I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. They're kind of expensive.
Maybe don't.
Do it live on television.
Okay. Guys, it's 2020. We're all ready. We're all ready for a great year of fish. I went to Mexico. And it came back and everything was different, but it started off pretty fun by going to Mexico. And so we're going to Mexico today to relive those early days. Brian, I guess before we get started, we have to talk a lot about, you know, things that happened in 2020. But can you just start by telling us how we arrived at you had a big choice, because I think a lot of people spent a lot of 2020 watching old fish shows, but also like watching the Beacon Jams and going through a lot of emotional things. So can you just, because I think we're going to talk about the year overall, but why did you want to bring us back to the very beginning of the year?
Well, there were four fish shows, so I had a lot to choose from here. I was considering for a while a Beacon Jam show because when
you could do a trade show like we've done.
Done a trade show. You know, but I did think that it would be a bit cheating because we have fish this year and we have what I would consider really quality fish. I listened to this show earlier this week and really enjoyed myself for a variety of reasons. I also think when I listened back to this show, something we were talking about last week in the 2019 episode of fish kind of reaching the end of something and needing whatever the next thing to be, whatever that was going to be. We think of the pandemic as kind of being this break point where the band goes and does their own thing. They get really creative. They go into their own heads. They come back in 2021 and bam, we have this amazing new sound, new approach, a lot of risk taking. And when I listened to this show, it kind of made me think, oh, well, this is what would have happened if the pandemic hadn't happened and the band just kind of continued that incremental evolution. Maybe we would have not had the shock of 2021 and the sound that came out of that year from Fish, but we would have seen, like, you're hearing new ideas and you're hearing new developments and you're hearing hints of what was to come. So I thought ultimately that this works better in the larger trajectory of the series, even though, as I said, when I think of live music in 2020, I think of three things. I think of Fish, Dinner, and a Movie. I think of Trey's Beacon Jams, which were at a very tense time in our country and in our world, a wonderful routine every single Friday night to get together. And then I also think of a young little jam band from Connecticut stealing the stage and the spotlight from everyone and absolutely throwing down some amazing shows in June and some amazing shows in the fall and really blowing a lot of people's minds. So that's kind of where my head usually goes when I think of live music in 2020, but this still happened. It still happened, so we got to talk about it.
All right. I mean, that seems fair.
Is it fair?
I think so. I mean, it's a hard year to talk about.
It is.
You know, for a lot of reasons. Yeah,
but there's actually like so much that happened for Fish this year. I mean, the band did a ton this year. It's crazy.
Don't be getting ahead of Meg's corner.
I'm not.
Was just going to say, we just like rush over and hang out in Meg's corner?
Let's go. Maggie,
let's do it.
Let's go.
Do it.
Okay. Yep.
Give us the corner.
We're already there.
Here we go. We're in Meg's corner already. Wow. This is the earliest we've ever been here, but you know, I'm not warmed up, but I'll jump right in. We have four nights in Mexico. We know we're going to talk about one of those shows today. And that's it. I mean, they had a big summer tour planned. They're going to go out west. They're going to go to Midwest, City, Dicks. But as early as mid-March, you know, everything gets shut down. Trey starts releasing some music that he's recording at home on Instagram. And these are a lot of the songs that he wrote with Tom and with Scott Herman, which he wrote kind of right as the pandemic was starting, very early days in March. And these songs are going to become Lonely Trip, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But these videos are just unbelievable that Trey was putting out on Instagram. They're really charming. Trey's like, has bare feet in a lot of them and his pets are like wandering through them. He's playing, you know, his toaster, toilet paper rolls. He's wearing weird outfits. He's like making music videos. It was just this window into Trey's brain, which was really such a lifeline for me and for so many people. In Tab though, before that, Trey did actually tour with Tab in January and February before the pandemic too. I saw one of those shows, the Capitol Theater. It was electric. Those shows were amazing, which will later, a lot of the recordings for that become the live album, Burn It Down. Trey also sat in with Dave Matthews in Mexico. And then the pandemic happens. And on August 11th, though, Trey is going to be the first in-studio guest on Jimmy Fallon. It's going to be the first in-studio guest in 5 months. And he's going to play I Never Needed You Like This Before, with the Roots backing him, reminding us that rock and roll survived the pandemic. I'll never forget watching that. It was such a fucking powerful moment. Trey looked wild. He looked like this, like, reclusive rock star, you know, with all this crazy long hair. And it was just, it was an awesome moment. And then the Beacon Jams are going to start October 9th. So as we know, it's an 8-week virtual residency at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan every Friday night at 8 o'clock from October 9th to November 27th. They're going to feature acoustic, electric performances by Trey and tons of other musicians. We've got the Full Tab Band, Jeff Pansky, Rescue Squad Strings, Ghost of the Forest is going to come out, Celise Henderson, Joe Lampert. It's just a lot happening every week. And all proceeds from the Beacon Jams are going to go towards Waterwheel and the Divided Sky Fund, which will be used to create this treatment center in Vermont, which is opening now, which is pretty unbelievable. And the thing to me about the Beacon Jams that really stood out was this way that Trey found to connect with the audience by streaming it on Twitch and by connecting with the audience. Like, if you look at the tracking, if you listen to them, the songs are like 3 or 4 minutes, and then there's like 4 minutes of Trey just chatting with everybody and like calling people out and making comments. And there's so many kind of inside jokes that developed out of that. We met Heather McDougall. You know, there was all this like incredible interplay and connection between the audience and Trey, and just a building of community that I found to be just so incredibly special, and all for such a good cause. So amazing. There's also a really short documentary called What Calls You Home that you can find online that the Beacon released, about the summary of like how these shows happened and kind of like some highlights from the shows. It's really cool. It's only like 15 minutes, but I would definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. The other big thing that's going to happen this year is Dinner and a Movie. And there were 29 of them in 2020. There's going to be more of them in 2021. But the first one was, of course, the Fuck Your Face show from Dix. And, you know, there's just some moments in here that I'll never forget. I think the first 2.0 shows that, or sorry, the first 1.0 shows that landed, that Virginia Beach show in 21st, 1997. I was at that show, and seeing that in Dinner and a Movie was just unbelievable. I have so many memories of that show. And then the second 1.0 show was a show that Jonathan and I were both at, my second Fish show, June 19th, 1995 in Deer Creek. I was like right up front for that show. And so seeing it live again on Dinner and a Movie was just unbelievable. But there's so many great moments that they played and so many cool things they did, like playing the Dix run throughout Labor Day and on Halloween, playing a few of the Halloween sets. They just did incredible things. And I think that was so special. And then, of course, in April, we have Sigma Oasis comes out. So in the second Dinner and a Movie, the band is going to tell us that they're going to push up the release date for their new album and release it on April Fool's Day with a big virtual streaming show. And I remember watching that, being alone and watching that. It was so cool, right? To have that together and see all the pictures that Renee Humer took at the barn during the recording. And it was just amazing. So that's their 15th studio album. And again, recorded at the barn and produced by Vance Powell. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's 8 archival releases this year. I'm not going to go through all of them, but really great shows are released this year. And then, of course, Trey is going to release Lonely Trip, which is one of my favorite albums that he's ever released. It's his 11th solo album. And it's got all these songs that he was releasing during the pandemic that he wrote with Tom and Scott Herman. Absolutely beautiful. It is, to me, the essence of what the pandemic felt like. And the fact that Trey could capture that and release it in this just beautiful album that came out that July, it's really special. And then Tab's going to release Burn It Down, that live album in September, recorded a lot of the shows in January and February on their run. Incredible album. Paige and Trey are going to release December, which I think has a huge impact on the band's jamming and the way these two communicate moving forward. And Mike is also going to release an album with Leo Kottke, Noon. So the band did a lot in 2020.
They were busy.
Well, I mean, a fair bit of that. Some of those things were put together in 2019. The album was recorded. Mike and Leo's album was recorded prior to pandemic and all.
But they still had to press release. You know, they had to still press publish.
You had to decide. Okay. Yeah. And that was before the record manufacturing was completely backed up, which really happened during that time.
And Burn It Down came out in 2021, right?
I believe that's right.
The album?
Yeah.
I thought it was released in September of this year, no? Of 2020.
I think it came out alongside a podcast that we did, which was called
Alive Again.
Yeah, it was right. It was at the same, I think it was all gathered and probably ready by then, but it came out.
There was a Live Fish release.
Out in September, but who knows?
Yeah, it came out in September of 2020, but
there was a Live Fish release that came out for a Tab show in conjunction with Alive Again. That was the Utica 2002 show where Trey had to play acoustic for the remainder of the second set because
the
building burned was the venue down. Basically, yeah. the building was falling apart.
Yeah.
According
yeah,
to mean, this, they, maybe it was the vinyl that came out in 2021. Because according to my internet, it says August of 2021, but it came out around that time, and that was great. So in one of those 2 years. Vinyl came out in 2021. I was just trying to make sure I understood that.
Because Megan's going to look like I have bad facts. Unbelievable.
Megan, can I add one thing to Meg's Corner from one of our listeners?
Please. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Just check this out. This is going to be pretty interesting. Because, as always, we got a voicemail. Let me see if this works.
Hello. Just want to say I've been really enjoying the 40 for 40 series. It's coming to a wrap soon. Interested to see what you have coming up for 2020 because of the COVID year. The big thing about 2020 in not Fish, but Oysterhead returned is the Oysterhead reunion is their first shows back since 2006 in Bonnaroo. And before that, they only had one tour in 2001, which it seems to get together during tragedy. Previous tour was disrupted by 9/11. So they came back in 2020 for two shows in Chicago and Colorado. And those are unique shows. I wish I was at. I wasn't at them, but they played the whole Oysterhead album. People were wondering if they were going to have new songs, which they didn't. But what they did do was they did covers. They did Voices in My Head by Police. They covered Fish, 46 Days. They covered First Tube. They even covered Primus, those damn blue collar tweakers with Trey playing that. That is just incredible. Yeah. I can't believe that happened. They even covered White Room by Cream and they teased Southbound Pachyderm by Primus. I wish I was at those shows. Corrodive's doing the lighting. They did two sets and they had more shows lined up that got canceled in 2020. They were supposed to play two in Chicago. Would have been the same setup, two sets. And they were supposed to play Sweetwater Fest, Bonnaroo, and Peach Fest. And, yeah, those all got canceled. They only played the two shows. They did make up the Peach Fest in 2021, which I did attend, and that was a big highlight. And they made up Sweetwater Fest, and that was the last show they've played. They didn't make up Bonnaroo or Chicago or the Frost in California. Anyway, really enjoying the series. Looking forward to hearing 2020. All right, thank you.
I'm so glad he brought that up because I forgot they played those two shows. I saw they had all the canceled shows, but I forgot that. That was so helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to raise it, but RJ brought it in a much better way than me just going, hey, by the way. Also, I'm not the guy.
Those shows are sick.
Oysterhead. I do not. I've never enjoyed a live Oysterhead recording, but I love the album. I have the record. It's so good. But I've just never found that band worked live for me. Other people dig it.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Megan, thank you for all that.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, you know, I didn't say this at the beginning because we jumped straight in, but we are embarking on a couple things that we need to tell you about. One is that Megan and I are embarking on a trip to New York City, although Megan lives there, but we're going to, on the 29th of December, we're going to be doing a live HF Pod recap of the 1228 show. And that is part of the Dude of Life Band show at Hill Country. If you're going to be in town for the shows, come to Hill Country that afternoon. We're going to do a recap and then there's going to be an interview with the Dude of Life and then his band's going to play and Megan and I will be there hanging out and a bunch of other people will as well. And then the last thing is just there's going to be a big series next year. We already have so many responses of people's top 25 tours of all time. We're going to put the link in the show notes. So make sure you go there and rank them yourself. It only takes a minute. I mean, unless you're Brian, it would take you like 5 years, but most people have filled it out quickly without much, you know, without much deliberation. And we will take those things into account, but we don't know how much account we'll take them into.
To be fair, the listeners are just picking their 25 favorite tours. We will be taking their selections as well as using science and data and knowledge and experience and all those important things excuse me, to figure out the exact order that these tours must be in. And then we will present them across 25 episodes through 2024, which is going to be a ton of fun.
Science.
I dispute the science. Just going on record now so that it's clear going forward.
I think it's good that we're...
We'll check your formulas.
Well, I think we can agree that the 2020 conversation is a good time to talk about, you know, whether we believe in science or not, generally and specifically.
Bringing politics into HF Pod. I love it. Tell us more, RJ.
Hey, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying...
Just asking questions on a podcast, huh?
Science.
I believe in science, not ranking science. But I think everybody knows that. So we shall carry on.
This is the heart of the debate.
I think that anybody who votes for 2020 gets their ballot thrown out, though. Speaking of also non-political things.
My goodness.
Okay. So what else do we have? We have... okay, so what else do we want to talk about with 2020? I do have some more voicemails, but I want to hear what you all have to say first.
Well, I think it'd be beneficial just to kind of maybe quickly how we individually got through 2020.
Yeah.
Obviously, a challenging year for everyone in kind of a way that everyone felt. I mean, there was obviously a lot of disunity, but there was a lot of unity and community that came out of this year in a really strong way. I know for myself, like I relied a lot on fish in 2020 from a just kind of keeping the clock going and keeping things, you know, like the Tuesday night dinner movies for the first 6 months of the pandemic were a huge way to just, okay, work is hard. We're getting adjusted. We're trying to figure out how to have a 4.5-year-old at home while also keeping our working lives going, keeping him stimulated, him active. And then, you know, knowing that every Tuesday night you had this, you know, really fun thing where you jumped online and everyone in your corner of Twitter was talking about something really fun. And the band was, like Megan said, they were bringing back these 1.0 shows. And they were featuring really high quality 3.0 shows. And then finally in 2021, we got our only 2.0 show, which was an amazing second set to feature. But you know, that the Beacon Jams, the emergence of Goose, like live music for me transformed from a thing that I go to a thing that I could experience in my own house in a really exciting way. And sharing that, you know, vibe from afar with a lot of people. So for me, that was probably the way that I like mentally was able to get through the year in a lot of cases. But I'm curious, Megan, how about you as a teacher, as a parent yourself, living in New York City? How did you get through 2020?
Yeah, it was tough. New York was crazy. We left pretty quickly and we spent a lot of the time up in Massachusetts so we wouldn't kill each other in a small space here in the city. And yeah, it was intense. I was remote teaching and I had two kids and they were remote learning. And the first week of the pandemic, I had like a divine intervention and I just went to a rescue and picked up a dog. And I didn't really talk to anybody about it. I was just like, family, I think we're going to go get a dog. And everybody was like, what the fuck? And we just got one and it changed our lives. And so great. So that was like a huge thing for me. And fish was huge for me too. You know, I had just started getting like really, really back into live music and fish and going to see, you know, all these different bands that I had, you know, loved so much when I was younger. And I was listening to a lot of HF Pod. And so one day I was listening to HF Pod while I was walking my dog and they were talking about the 1996 Europe tour. And RJ said, you know, hey, we've never talked to anybody that went on this tour. So if you went on this tour, like reach out. And so I did, and I reached out and RJ let me come on. And we did a little Facebook Live with the guys, and I showed a lot of photos and told a lot of stories, and I prepped for that episode like it was the biggest job interview of my life. I had pages and pages of notes, my photos compiled. I knew what I was going to say, and I had so much fun. So that was really fun, and that was in April of 2020. And I was just listening to a lot of HF Pod. I was listening to a lot of fish, and yeah, I was watching all of the dinner movies and Beacon Jams. There was just a lot of I felt really connected to the community in a way that I hadn't in a long time. So it was really special.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born, to the island's iconic recording studios. We are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. Because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com/VIP/helpingfriendly. That's DistroKid with a capital K, .com/VIP/helpingfriendly for a special offer. Thanks, DistroKid.
How about you, RJ?
Well, I wanted to see if I could... I'll tell you... So I have, we decided to move the week before the pandemic started. So we put our house on the market in DC the day that the shutdown started. And then we had to move into our in-laws' house at the very beginning of the pandemic. And my birthday was a week after the pandemic started. And I have this, I want to see if I can share this because this is there's something that's very special about this. If I can, let me see. Can you guys see this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me see if you can hear it. Can you hear that?
No audio.
No. Okay. No. So just picture this. This is a surprise birthday party for me in my in-laws' house. And behind that door are all three of my kids and my wife crying and screaming for 30 seconds while I'm standing outside waiting to go into my surprise birthday. And that kind of, it really just kind of summarizes 2020 for me in so many ways. I'll share it with you guys after this, just because it's really great to hear. But yeah, so we moved and we were in four different houses and trying to keep Osiris going through different show ideas and different formats. And I don't know. I don't know if we made it through. I mean, I guess we did because we're alive, but it didn't really feel like we made it through, but then we ended up in this house that we live in now and everything turned out fine. But it was a pretty ridiculous year. Pretty ridiculous year. I don't know how I survived, but I think probably music was part of it, but I don't really remember. I've kind of blocked a lot of it out. What about you, Jonathan?
I basically hold up into this room. So this room where everybody sees me recording and now and have been for a while, I started coming in here and I started working in here in 2020 when we shut down. And pretty quickly after that, I ordered this desk, which is a very small desk, and just started arranging things and then eventually put in a stereo, set up my mic, brought all my guitars in here. And so I went kind of crazy in this very room and then started recording my first album here in this room. And I watched Fish on the TV over here and watched the dinner and the movies in here because my family didn't really want them downstairs where they were living their lives. And that's fine. So yeah, that was 2020 for me. And, kind of have continued a lot of that working from home and all of that stuff and making records in here and talking to you guys right here like we are now. Yeah, so 2020 was a kind of a pivot point for a lot of things.
Yeah, same with me.
Some good.
Yeah, I think maybe everyone has that to a certain extent. I mean, I'm so happy we ended up where we are and, everything's great. So I guess that's good. But 2020 was hard.
There was a lot of reflection really that year. Too. Yeah, that too. 2020 was like a lot of, I think a lot of people reflected on things. I knew I made some pretty significant life changes towards the end of 2020 that have been positive. We also had a daughter in early 2021. So most of the end of 2020 was like trying to figure out how to navigate this pandemic with a pregnancy, which was kind of crazy and inspired us to just kind of like be inward in a lot of cases, which was really good.
Brian, can I just share there's a slightly more positive, I think, take on the pandemic from one of our listeners from
Please.
The quarantine era. Mine was sad, but I do want to share that video with you guys so you can hear the kids screaming in the background. All right, let me see if this works.
Hey, this is Adam calling in again. I would say that maybe you might recognize my voice now as being just slightly more nasally than all of the other people that call in to the podcast. We're on a couple episodes now, and I got to tell you, this is actually part one of a three-parter. So either only RJ will hear this heartwarming story, or all of your listeners will get to hear it, but it will unfold over the next couple of weeks. So anyway, my 2020 official experience actually has to do with meeting my girlfriend. We started dating in the middle of February 2020, and it was supposed to be a long-distance relationship. Long story short, things went very different, and we ended up actually moving in together by August. But what happened is we spent a lot of time quarantining, you know, at our different apartments, and we would watch the dinner and the movie every week together. She wasn't a Fish fan per se. She had seen them once before, but that was Fenway 2019, one of the nights that doesn't really count. So anyway,
no.
We watched dinner and the movie.
Doesn't count.
She was getting more into the band. I was playing like every Fish DVD I had. It all culminated with us watching Between Me and My Mind. And she really started to fall in love with the band. So anyway, and then of course we had the Beacon experience as well, where we tuned into all of those. So I'll keep it brief for you here, but that kind of sums up my 2020 Fish experience, which is really bonding over this thing that I loved with my, you know, new girlfriend at the time. And anyways, tune in next week to hear what happened in 2021.
I can't wait.
To be continued.
I love this serial saga.
Lockdown ends so and she awesome. runs.
I like that our listeners are creating their own podcast within our podcast.
I know, really it's great. Genius.
Very creative. Okay. So should we go to Mexico or are we talking about?
We got to stop one more corner.
I thought, here's the thing.
How many movies did you go to in 2020?
I thought it was more of a triangle.
We
this
watched
year, not
a
like
lot
a
of TV and movies.
That's true.
So
true.
I will give you good news, RJ. There were less movies that were made in 2020 that came out in 2020 than in 2019 or 2022. The downside, though, and this may make you happy, but it makes me very sad, is that the movie industry really suffered and didn't really return to quote-unquote normalcy until very recently, because obviously the Barbenheimer phenomenon of the summer brought movies back to movies are back, baby! Yeah. But also then the actor's strike was going on, and that, you know, pushed a lot of stuff off. There's a bunch of stuff that should have come out this fall that didn't come out, but there was still some good stuff that happened in 2020 from a pop cultural standpoint. So much to RJ's chagrin, I'm just going to keep this intro going to extend this segment as long as possible.
Do it.
Television. We had a couple notable TV shows that came out in 2020, as well as a few that closed the doors. How To with John Wilson, one of the funniest and most awkward television shows imaginable, came out on HBO. The Queen's Gambit came out in fall 2020. That made everybody love chess for about 10 minutes. The final season of BoJack Horseman came out. The Crown season 4, which introduced this minute character who has really risen the ranks in people's hearts, Princess Diana. She debuted on the Crown season 4. Two excellent excellent sports documentaries. It came out early 2020, saw the Cheer documentary. Really, really good stuff.
Oh, my God. And so then, good.
Some really weird stuff has come out about that those group of cheerleaders in the years since, but it was really fun in early 2020. And then with sports shutting down, Netflix raced to get The Last Dance finished and put that up over the course of April and May to coincide with what would have been the NBA playoffs. I'm a 90s kid from Chicago. The 90s Chicago Bulls are like the most important thing to me in the world. Movies, a couple really good ones.
It was really great. That was so great.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I'm sorry.
Even
like,
I
like, you know, I don't care about sports. I'm glad you enjoy that. But how do you skip over the motherfucking Tiger King? It's dumb, but was massively popular.
That was hated huge. It. Hated it. So huge.
Hated massively everything about popular. It.
Wait, so
hated
this is only. This is so only. That's why we hear a yearly update on The Crown.
Yeah, so it's only things that Brian likes. So, Jonathan, we have to.
I watched the first season of The Crown. It was like, okay, cool, yeah, okay.
So we have to put our own thing together. So next week, I'll come with some pop culture that I like.
Yeah, like we haven't even talked about The Real Housewives at all. Like, not even.
I would love to include things that you all cared about as well. But I'm on a time limit here. All right. So what our host tells us that we have 30 seconds to do all of pop culture. So I've got to narrow it down quite a bit. Yeah, Tiger King was a huge deal. My take on Tiger King. I was on Twitter at the time. I was interacting with Trump supporters. Why do I want to watch Tiger King? Why is that my leisure activity? Why am I doing this?
It was a lot funnier than the Trump reporters. Supporters is the word I mean.
That's true.
Yeah.
Movies. We had a really adorable little movie debut in mid-July called Palm Springs that I actually really enjoyed. I recommend people checking that out. Mank came out. David Fincher's tribute to the guy who wrote Citizen Kane. Nomadland won Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Nolan did everything he damn well could to get people back to the movie theaters way too early for a movie that doesn't really make sense in Tenet. So some good stuff. Did I miss anything? RJ, Megan, Jonathan?
I don't know when things came out unless you tell me. So no, I trust you.
I covered it all.
There's nothing better than feedback of, hey, let me give my take. And then, oh, I don't know anything. So I appreciate you guys.
I didn't ask to give my take. I just, you know, rolled my eyes at yours.
I mean,
that's always the best way.
This is like America, Brian. This is what happens. You say, you complain, and then when people ask you to do stuff, you're like, never mind.
Do you have any ideas? No, just I don't like what you're doing. Yeah, I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I got a couple friends like that. Music was still coming out. Live shows couldn't happen, but albums were still coming out, and there's some amazing music in 2020. I'm going to run through just a quick, brief snippet of it. Some of them I love, some of them I don't love, but I'm trying to be all-encompassing here for you, RJ. Fiona Apple's Fetch the Bolt Cutters came out, the first 10.0 on Pitchfork since 2010, I want to say. Bob Dylan's Rough and Rowdy Ways, my personal favorite record of 2020, I think is one of the strongest records he's ever made. Rose City Band's Summer Long, Phoebe Bridgers' Punisher. Taylor Swift put out two excellent records, Folklore and Evermore, proving that even the biggest stars can be, woodsy folk stars, just kind of releasing independent music out into the world. The Microphones in 2020 was stunning. Haim's Women in Music. Neil Young finally released Homegrown. Waxahachie put out St. Cloud about 3 weeks into the pandemic, and that was like a warm hug every time you needed a good friend. Bill Callahan put out Gold Record. Fish put out Sigma Oasis. Jeff Parker's Sweet for Max Brown, the self-titled Bonnie Light Horseman record, another one of those warm hugs throughout 2020, came out. Beautiful album. The Next put out three, and Ezra Feinberg put out Recumbent Speech. I'm sure that there are about 400 additional records I'm leaving off this list, so I will turn it to you guys to fill in the blanks.
I just want to tell you that I, when the Long Pond Sessions came out, which was, I think, Thanksgiving of 2020, that basically was my first introduction to Taylor Swift. And from then on, I was like, this is incredible. And it just like really kind of changed my wife and I, the way we look at popular music. was a pretty, that was an important, that was like a very important moment for me.
I didn't know you were a Long Pond noob. That's cool.
Yeah. You mean before that? Oh, you mean before that? You know what? I'm just saying.
Those were great. Those are great. Those
it
great.
Came out on like Thanksgiving and we watched it that day and it just, it like changed everything for me.
I agree Crazy. About that. Folklore totally changed how I felt about Taylor Swift. Like, and before then I just thought she was like, you know, like a wannabe country star and then like a pop star with like decent music. But it wasn't until Folklore that I understood like how thoughtful and imaginative she can be in her songwriting. And I fell in love with that album and that changed everything for me about Taylor Swift too. So, and that Waxahachie album was my favorite album of the year. That album, I still listen to it all the time.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Jay, you got anything that we left off?
Just a couple Elkhorn records came out that year. Everybody should listen to Elkhorn. Storm Sessions was like the main one I think they put out. That was pretty good. Real Estate's the main thing. Did you mention that one? Sorry.
I didn't, but that is a great record. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I love Real Estate.
Really good. Eli Winter had put out Unbecoming. I got actually so many records in 2020. It's kind Same. Of... horrifying, and they're all sitting right behind me. Because that's the other thing Fridays? That I did during lockdown was I just bought records and received them and played them and repeat.
You caused the global crisis. Nonsense. In vinyl.
I personally infused the independent music industry with a significant portion of my income.
Well, because was it starting in June that Bandcamp Fridays, the first of the month, all proceeds went to the artists?
Sometime in
that. Yeah, something like
I
that.
I don't remember.
But that was the general gist of it. And I just remember like whatever that Friday was, I spent so much money on music constantly.
Constantly.
And it felt good.
Every month.
All right. Brian, I think this straw man of me giving you a time limit is really, you know, I think our audience buys into it. Everyone believes it, but it's just, you know, it's just not true because it always ends up being 20 minutes anyway. So really, why are we pretending? Why are we pretending we have time limits? Megan, can I just say that I never knew that the picture that's hanging above you is so awesome. And I'm just like, can you just show us the picture?
Sure.
Because I don't know if Brian and Jonathan have seen it either. It's really
it's
like
Jay Blakesburg. So it's from May 10th, 1987, Laguna Seca. Here, can I move you closer?
Yes. Look at that celebratory atmosphere.
That's good stuff.
That's a dead show, man. That's vibes.
Yeah, that's
RJ got to see where I record when he came over and met my phantom family.
They were all hired actors, but they were great.
I mean, the children were believable, no?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So should we get to Mexico, guys?
Yeah, we should. We should.
Cool. Let's go.
We already,
RJ, yeah. You were there.
I was there.
Why don't you set the scene? This was the first four-night Mexico run, the first one that had a welcome set. I believe that they changed locations for this run, but
yep.
Tell us what your experience was like being there on the ground and lead us into the show.
Yeah. So this was the first year at the Moon Palace. And I guess the 3 years before had been at Barcelo. And yes. it was a new experience. And also if you go now, this was, it doesn't really matter, but the stage for this one was set up all the way next to the Grand, which is like the opposite side of the beach of where it is now. But we were really excited to go to Mexico for the first time. And like Tom really was the one who was like, you got to come. And then, you know, a bunch of other friends went and it felt like a real like celebration. It was just so fun. It was so chill. It was so, we had no idea what was, you know, going to happen in the coming weeks. And we just were so glad to be seeing Phish on the beach. It was a totally different experience. I mean, the AC shows, I think, get close, but like, you know, we haven't really seen anything like this if in person, if you hadn't been to Mexico. Now we can get sort of like variations on it. But really,
actually, before we go into the show, yeah. Can I ask you a question about Mexico? Because
yeah.
It's almost like I've only been once, and it was weird when I was there because I didn't have the expectation or the like show anxiety that I have when I see fish anywhere else. Did you have that experience too, where you're just not worried about how fish is going to play or what they're going to play? Or, and maybe it's because you're just in this like summer camp environment and you were there for so long, you don't care, you're going to get stuff. But I don't know. It's like, I didn't care if the shows were good. I don't know. There's just this different feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, even less than I care usually, which is very little. I mean, I was definitely just there to like hang out and go on the beach. The Thursday night, like welcome set, you know, was just like, I mean, all of it is just like, you're just there and you're just there and whatever is going to happen happens. And it's just such a great thing to be a part of, because I think I've talked about this before, but like part of the thing of these like all-inclusive resorts is that, you know, all of us, like we make, you know, you guys all know about this idea of like decision fatigue and, you know, mm-hmm. like every day we make like thousands of decisions, right? And we're like, from like Jonathan deciding to wear that awesome HF Pod shirt, which I still don't have so one good. Of those.
I don't have an HF Pod shirt either. I don't know.
Maybe I can buy one on the internet. Maybe. But like, you know, when you go to one of these resorts, they take care of you to the point where you don't have to do anything. Like you don't have to decide like anything. You can basically have everything kind of decided for you if you want to do that, in a way that makes things like really, really, really relaxing. That's what I found. And I didn't really realize that until like a couple of days into the first time we went, which was this year, 2020. So I was like, wow, you don't really have to do anything, you know? Even if you go on vacation to a nice place, you got to like, you're like renting a car and then you got to decide like, where are we driving? We got to go to dinner. We got to find a restaurant. You got to like, which beach are we going to visit? Whatever. It's just, you go there and then you just are there. And you don't have to do anything. And it is, the music is great because you're on the beach.
Yeah.
So
cool.
I really enjoyed it.
Love it. Should we dive into the show?
Let's do it.
I mean, I don't think we need to. Archie just said it's great if you're on the beach.
It's a good time. Fun time. It's all about the friends we make along the way.
Brian,
as we well know.
Brian, why this show among the four?
I mean, I think that this is the strongest show of the weekend. I think it's also, it continues the trend that we started to see the previous year, where they were treating Mexico shows the way that they would treat a random stop on a tour, where there was a lot, you know, the first year kind of felt like just this novelty of, hey, we're in Mexico, we're on a beach, it's the middle of January. The second year, Megan, Jonathan, and I did a podcast coming up on 2 years ago now about the 2017 run that is sneakily, it's very underrated. The 2019 run though, like those shows kind of carried over the fireworks of fall 2018, the fireworks of the New Year's Eve run. And we got this like, you know, preview of, you could have these like really cool touch points in fish history as they're kind of going through the year, where the fall tour bleeds into the New Year's Eve run, which bleeds into Mexico. And, you know, consistency throughout the year from these like shorter runs was kind of reigning supreme. And I felt like this happened again. We had a really strong New Year's Eve run at the end of 2019. That 1229 show, that 1230 show are outstanding. I really enjoyed the single set show. It kind of was, there were a lot of like random songs. They played Shipwreck. They played Shake Your Coconuts for the first time since the Baker's Dozen. The second night they had Shafty kind of segued in and out. It was just like a lot of cool gimmicks and really fun, odd set listing. They randomly dropped a Week Apart Groove in the encore, even though they never played Mike's song during the show. But this show, as we're going to get into, like really awesome set listing calls, some really cool jamming in really sneaky places. And it felt to me, listening back to it, kind of like I said at the top of the episode, that kind of, as we're going to see when we get to 2021, the structure of a Phish show starts to kind of melt away, and any song can start to be played at any point in time and can lead into a jam, regardless if it's the second song of the show or if it's deep in the second set as we're kind of like getting to a rocking conclusion. And the structure of Phish shows since they came back in 2021 has been such a fascinating thing for me. And one of the things I've enjoyed the most, this show seems to have that. Like, this show has a tweezer in a really random place and ends the first set in kind of the way you would expect a second set to begin. The jamming happens midway through set two and then continues as we're bleeding into the end of the set. The encore has a really cool kind of shocking song selection. So just to kind of dive in, set one, we get Willin', Tube, Evening Song, Set Your Soul Free, You Sexy Thing, fading into 46 Days, Waste, fading into Your Pet Cat, Tweezer, segueing into Manteca, segueing into Makasupa Policeman, and segueing into Twist to close things out. RJ, you were there. You were on the ground. Why don't you give us kind of a rundown of what your thoughts were on this overall set, what it was like to re-listen?
Yeah, and this was, I think this was probably the closest I'd ever been to the stage, and maybe still at this point, because it in Mexico, the other thing, as Megan knows from last year, you can kind of like, you can get pretty close because it's not, you know, it's not the MSG floor. It's not a pit at Merriweather. It's like the beach, and people definitely lay out very large blankets and stuff like that. But if you want to get up close, like, you can get up close. And we were, you know, basically 5 feet from the stage or something. It was pretty wild. I thought this set, I mean, it was really fun to be there. I mean, the Tube really, I think, is a pretty great jam. And I think, I guess the show, the thing listening back, all these shows were kind of like more chill than I remember, but not necessarily in a bad way. You know, it just like, I think it really captured kind of the beach vibe. I think Trey's playing was really good, especially in the Tube and some of the other jams. But it was like a pretty laid back run, and I think a pretty laid back set. I think when you hear a tweezer in set one, you know, once they go into tweezer, you're like, all right, this is going to happen. I'm sorry. I still expect that's going to happen, that it's going to be 25 minutes of tweezer, but sometimes it goes into Manteca and then into Makasupa with some You Sexy Thing in it. So I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. And I think the Tube, you know, is probably like the highlight of the set, but interesting transitions and, like you said, kind of song choices throughout.
Meg, what were your thoughts listening back to this?
Yeah, I haven't listened to this in a really long time, so it was fun to listen back to, especially now that I'd been to Mexico and I can kind of picture being there. But I think it's interesting. There's some really fascinating song selections in this set, in the show especially, but totally in this set. The opening with Willin, which, you know, is the first time it's been performed since 2010 for the Halloween Little Feat cover. And it's just like a nice ease into the show. And this Tube, though, I was doing other things and it completely like brought me out of it and just sucked me in. This jam is just great. Fishman is just kind of like staying within the Tube beat a lot for most of it, but everybody else is kind of swirling around in a way that I just absolutely loved. Thought this jam was great. And it's 12-minute Tube, like second song. That's good stuff right there. And I love the Set Your Soul Free. I think Mike sounds amazing. He's super turned up. This whole show, Mike is just, I kept hearing him and thinking he sounded awesome. Really fun, really dancey. I think You Sexy Thing is like the perfect thing to play on a beach in Mexico. This is the third time they played it at this point. And I heard the fourth time they played it the next summer when it opened the second night in Hershey, when they played like the You Sexy Wombat. And it was so fun. And that was actually the first time I did a quick hit on HF Pod. Brian, I came on with you and we got to talk about those two Hershey shows, which was really fun. But yeah, I think definitely like you were saying, RJ, I think this, the Tube, and then also the end of this set, the Tweezer, Manteca, Makasupa is so much fun. The Tweezer, Mike again sounds great in this like mini jam. Paige is on the piano. When they find Manteca, you can hear Trey laughing and he starts singing it and you can tell they just kind of stumbled into it. I love what Paige gets into with the synths in Manteca. It's really cool. They groove on it for a while and then they find the You Sexy Thing riff again. And just to play Makasupa Policeman over that and to have them play with the lyrics is really fun. You know, like, woke up in the morning, You Sexy Thing, and Trey's like playing with all of that. And They just sound like they're having fun. Super chill, fun. I mean, I think the energy level, like, is kind of muted. I don't know if that's just from being on the beach or that's just their vibe, but it does feel like slower and less like powerful than I sometimes expect fish to be, especially in the beginning of the second set. But we'll talk more about that.
I kind of think it feels a little less maybe urgent than an ordinary fish show, but that is kind of goes with what RJ is describing, because they're also there. And this is the year you mentioned Trey was there early, and he sat in with Dave Matthews. And so, like, because Dave Matthews did the weekend before or whatever. So, like, he's on vacation in it, just living it. And, we'll work for a few hours, and they're having a good time. The tube is, you know, a clear highlight. It's great, great tube with a, like, bliss peaking. I love that they played Willen. I would love that if they played it again when I was there sometime. I like this tweezer. Not super long, although I would probably track it like half the other tweezers that have a manteca groove in it, where it's just tweezer and you put a little asterisk and you say manteca, you know, because it's not like whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a good jam, but either way. and I really like the you sexy Makasupa situation that goes on there. That's just a lot of fun. And super fun. I like it when fish has fun. And the twist that comes out of that kind of beautifully is it's not deep, but it just works perfectly to wrap the set.
Jonathan, I just want to amend what you said. I only like it when they have fun, if it's in the very specific way that I also want to have fun at that time.
Agree.
You know?
Exactly.
If they're having fun how they want to have fun, only if it aligns with my specific needs, you know?
It is kind of an interesting marrying of, like, they are, I think to your point, Jonathan, they are very laid back. They're having a ton of fun. It does feel like they're on vacation, but there is still, between Tube, Set Your Soul Free, and the whole tweezer madness that happens at the end of the set, there's enough improv. There's some real, like, stuff to dive into. Like, the Set Your Soul Free gets into this, like, very hypnotic segment around, like, 9 minutes, where Trey is just playing these chords that you didn't hear a ton of that sort of stuff in 2019. You know, we're still a ways away from the Jedi pedal coming into effect here. No pun intended. But he's clearly trying to seek out new sounds and new ideas to throw into a jam. I am on the same page with you, though, Jonathan. It's wild. Like, I was looking at Manteca. It's only been played 16 times. But, like, has it been only played 16 times? Because, like, there's probably a lot of versions that, like, could be played.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
This is the last time it was played. And, like, there were two very notable gaps. They played it on 11/14/95 in the middle of that incredible stash. And the next time was 10/30/98, 219 shows. And then from 10/30/98, they wouldn't play it again until 12/31/2010, 301 shows. So within that, there's a lot of Mantecas. There's a lot of Mantecas in there.
If you look at all the teases, there's more Manteca teases than there are performances. Yeah. And they're not all listed. I mean,
it's like Manteca and San Jose are just always being teased no matter where we are.
I'm glad we got to the important stuff in this episode. You know what I mean?
Like right? Properly tracking fish shows.
Yeah.
I'm right, like, there with you.
Come on.
No, but I thought this was a really cool first set. I thought, you know, overall it flowed really nicely. Do we have anything else we want to highlight here? Any sort of track listing that you want to go through, RJ, or should we jump in the next set too?
I guess it's fine. No, the twist at the end of the set really does. I think it sets up set two nicely. I remember being, after 3 days there, it was, I think everyone was feeling like a little bit tired. I think Saturday nights, like, you're kind of reaching the end of the weekend. Everyone's like in the sun all day. And it's like, you know, I think going out at the first set on a jam like that sets up well for set two. Mm-hmm.
And it does, because set two just carries over the trend of random song selections and jamming. Set two and the encore, we've got Energy going into Soul Planet, going into Waves, going into Carini, going into Chalk Dust Torture, which has a very fluid segue into Have Mercy, which fades into A Life Beyond the Dream. our only pause of the set before the rich man's slave to the traffic light, otherwise known as Harry Hood. And then we encored with Sweet Jane, my God, Sweet Jane, and yeah. Tweezer reprise. Really cool stuff in this set. RJ, returning to you first, since you were there, which means your opinion counts more than the rest of ours. What happened during this set and what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, the waves is the big headline, I think, just in terms of the improv. I, again, kind of more laid back, I guess, than I, or maybe as laid back as I remember, but in a good way. And I think the Chalk Dust mid-set, you know, who knows? But the segue into Have Mercy, though, is like, what a great song. I mean, I think we've had other Have Mercies on this show.
Last week.
Just but last I week. Feel like we're just, mm-hmm. we're continuing to you know, pick shows with this song, which is great. This was the second and last time I saw it. And also the last time it was played. It's so great. It's such a great song. So I guess that's what stuck out to me. But Jonathan is waving his arms wildly for those of you who aren't watching. I think he wants to refute my points, please.
Well, yes, I do. And I will go completely out of sequence just to say that I love this Chalk Dust. I love this Chalk Dust here. I love Same. This one. The peak on this thing peaks so hard that I had to jump up out of my chair last yeah. time I was so fucking good.
It is good. Right? It is good.
Jumped up and bit him.
It's straight ahead in its structure, but just like when they hit that peak, it is just so good.
Yeah.
Better than usual. Go ahead.
I just want to finish. No. You go ahead, and then I just want to say one more thing about the set. No. I have
go ahead. No, you do that. I'm done disputing you.
No, I just think I think you're right about the. I think when you're there, and then they go into Chalk Dust in the middle of a set after a big waves, Carini. It's like, is this going to end the set? And then, you know, it does. I think the flow is good, and I just will say that my wife, Rachel, she really likes Life Beyond the Dream. I like it too, and I love Harry Hood, and so that combo to close it out was really pretty spectacular for the first time on a beach watching fish. Great way to end a set.
There you go. I like Energy. Wasn't Energy on sort of a drought at this point, or had they brought it back? I can't keep track of this nonsense.
This was the first version since Mohegan the previous summer, but they would not play this again until October 20th, 2021. So significant time. I mean, it's a rare song at this point in time. It's only been played. Actually, oh, thank you. You're right. Thank
December,
you.
Yeah, so.
You were just setting me up for that, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was just testing you. no, I like that.
It's been played 10 times, though, across 10 years.
I find it interesting that the song Energy doesn't have as much energy as you'd want it, as you might.
That is exactly what I was going to say.
It's just steal your notes.
So low energy.
It's like mid-tempo.
It's
but it's about the world. But it's about the world being made of energy, not the song.
Slagging.
Yeah, it's totally like a 1970s Coca-Cola commercial.
With the big wheels. Song. Totally. And people running out.
The tempo. The tempo it's is slow. Pretty small for slow for being energy.
Yeah.
Are you guys comparing those to Jeb Bush?
No. I don't know low why energy I Jeb. Feel like they have this cover, though, God. Because they don't need it. I just have never felt they needed this cover.
People love this cover, though.
I would argue that the performances refute your point that they don't need it, because there have been four very notable jams off of this song that all absolutely rule. But I agree with you. It does.
Yeah, we just, get we have lots notable of songs jams that and jam, songs. And I just kind of feel do we need this song that just is, I don't know, the lyrics are pretty lame. And this version, though, is pretty. I mean, Trailer fucks up the lyrics and laughs, and it's it's a little.
I'm a jam fiend, and I will just say beggars can't be choosers. I'll take any song that can jam at this point in my life.
I love Megan. I love Critical Megan. Critical Megan is my favorite.
Something.
It's great.
You know?
It's really, really great.
The hell's up with this stupid-ass song?
It is not good. Like, and it, and we have other songs that this band plays where the lyrics are just okay. So like, why do we need a cover where the lyrics are just okay? Like, if you're going to do a cover, make it something like Badass, right? That's just my opinion. So yeah, that's how I feel about the beginning of this set. And then I heard Soul Planet and I was like, is Trey actually fucking with everybody and just playing songs that people don't like? Like Soul Planet, Set Your Soul Free, Energy, like it's just, it's kind of funny. And it just feels like it doesn't really... The Ocean Is Love. And it doesn't really go anywhere, but then I feel like they nail it in Waves. And I can stop being critical now because I absolutely love this song. Waves is just, I love this song. And this version, like we've said, is beautiful. It's so, Trey sounds so delicate and so pretty in this version of the song. And then it gets like darkier and off kilter and like a little funkier. And then Fishman starts like a trip hop beat and Trey is playing these like repeating riffs and the cymbals start crashing and the piano is like pounding and it has this like big ending with like lots of reverb and Trey comes in with the Soul Planet quotes and like Reba thinks the ocean is love.
Can I say one more thing, Brian? Just about.
You can say as many more things as you want. Just keep talking.
There's no
time limit on you.
I forgot to make this point earlier. Both Evening Song This Night and Sigma Oasis The Night Before, it was the second time that both of those songs have been played, which is kind of like hard to believe because we've heard both of them like so much at this point, but both being new and both really well placed, I think, like the Sigma Oasis from The Night Before to open set two, and then this Evening Song This Night that came in set one right after a tube. But like they both sound pretty different from how they sound now. Like they were clearly just trying to like figure it out. Like Evening Song sounded so much different to me this version than it does more recently. So I just want to make that point.
I just want to put a point in the category of Evening Song being a great song because I love that song
too.
And it's gorgeous. I like
so
how
beautiful.
It's dark, but it also has a really just like the melody is really nice. And I'm a fan of it. And I don't really understand how people could complain about a 3-minute song at a Fish show, even if you don't like it. But you know, I love this song and I'm into it.
It's like such a great opener too. I feel like it's such a great opener
it's
to
great.
Like ease you into a show. Like it just is the best vibe.
Well, and the way that it opened up the MSG residency this year,
exactly.
You know, Proceed the Night with Caution. And then we go into that huge wave of hope. I just want to give a few quick thoughts about this set because I really like this set. I love this show overall. I hadn't listened to this show in a little bit of time, but I had remembered really enjoying it in the moment. I just want to give a special shout out to friend of the pod, Ben Greenfield. He had me over at his house this evening to webcast. I was in Los Angeles for work, cooked me an amazing meal. He struggled with his internet for the first couple of songs of the webcast and was like, I don't know if this is going to work out. And then it felt like home and then it ended up working out. But I want to give a shout out because he invited his neighbor over, who's a really cool guy, who is a big Dead fan. And he came over for the second set and they played Energy. And Ben was trying to explain to him that, you know, it's a kind of a weird, slightly lame song that has a really good jamming history. And then Soul Planet started up and he was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. This is not how this band always sounds, but usually they'll jam this song. And then they went to Waves and Waves has this amazing jam that goes on for about 10, 15 minutes. And then at 17:40, they come back with The Ocean Is Love. And his friend just started laughing and he stayed through the remainder of the set. But I felt that vibe of being like, hey, just hang with me and listen to this really cool band that I'm just like a little bit obsessed with. And I listen to a lot of their shows and I talk about them on podcasts for hours each week. And then they play Soul Planet and you're like, okay, like I promise this isn't what everything is like. But I do want to give like a very serious shout out to the Carini. I just at risk of it being overshadowed. It gets into a really cool jamming space around 8 minutes. Those kind of like weird chordal riffs that Trey was playing during the Set Your Soul Free reemerge. You get these really cool undertones from Paige, like that sound that is so familiar now with 2021 through 2023 Fish, where Paige is just playing really like six keyboards at once, it sounds like, and a lot of synth tones. And Trey is kind of going over the top with what sounds like a keyboard / bass himself. That's happening here in this jam. And then like there's this, Trey goes to this like high register of the guitar, like way up the neck, and is playing this like It's like really creepy and weird, and like the effect he's using makes it sound like icicles coming off of a building. It breaks apart completely around 10:30 and goes into this like just hypnotic sludge is just the way that it sounded to me. And then that somehow fades into chalk dust. And like my first notes on chalk dust repeated a lot of notes I had throughout this show that they just knew how to set list tonight, you know, and you can argue whatever, like, maybe they do something and you don't hear it and you don't like it. And so maybe you're the one who's at fault. I don't really know like where to square that argument, but I do know that on certain nights, like things just feel like they work and it just like a song emerges and it's like, that is the perfect song to play right now. And that's how this entire show felt, going into Have Mercy, getting a Hood to close out. I mean, I'm a huge proponent that every great show should end with Hood. And then to have this encore be Sweet Jane, which has only been played 5 times, is not really a song that people expect to hear in any sort of way. This is the first time we heard it since the Baker's Dozen. It just like, it felt like they weren't trying in the best way possible on this night. And everything just kind of flowed. And it made me think a lot about, you know, I think in the long run, we are lucky that there was a break, a healthy break for the band at that point in time. I think that the pandemic allowed them the chance to step back and really take in what Phish meant to them, which has re-energized them in a lot of ways. But it also, listening to the show, made me wonder like, wow, if we had gotten that summer tour 2020, there were some really cool ideas that were starting to percolate during that point in time.
Yeah, I think that part of the show, like from Waves on through Carini through Chalk Dust, it has that feeling that we get a lot in 21 where the songs don't really matter. They're just like touch tones to like some really interesting jamming. And I felt like that was like, it's when the band is in that space where it doesn't matter what song they're playing, they're really like dialed in. And I kept hearing that throughout that whole, I mean, that whole section is super interesting. Like you were saying, Brian, all those jams are just really varied and really cool. And I agree. I think it's a really good second set.
I want to talk about this second set a little bit. I don't know if you guys have, but I have a couple more thoughts. The Waves jam gets to this point which is something, a point that we heard a lot of in 21, not much of in 19, 18, 17, where he is
19, 18. I see.
Counting backwards, they're numbers that represent years. He's layering his delay loops in a way with just this, while changing what he plays. And it's just several minutes in the latter portion of Waves that is an absolute, just gloriously weird fucking bit that I just love. And he started doing a lot more of that 21, but also hopping on a synth pedal and making it even gnarlier. And speaking of gnarly, I think you were referencing this, Brian, but the Carini gets so heavy with this big chunky ass chords. That is probably my favorite part of the set, to the point that I barely even remember hearing Have Mercy because it's too freaking light. I don't care about that. I like this heavy ass shit that he's doing in Carini. I'm super there for it. It's so good. It's so cool. And even on the tail of the Waves, I honestly think that the Carini jam is my favorite part of this set. Hood jam. Hood has a little jam. It's quite nice. Great finish to the show. And it's funny, you were talking about like how they're playing. I think you used the word like don't care, Brian. I think you used that phrase, and they are playing with kind of a casualness, which suits Sweet Jane perfectly. Sweet Jane 100%. Is a song you should not have to try hard to play. If it sounds like you're trying hard, you're not playing it right. There should be almost a vibe of disinterest from the band when you play that song or you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Such a good way to put it.
Can I jump in one more time, just Jonathan, just go on that sound of with the Carini. First of all, I loved the sound of that, particularly Trey's sound at this run, and like what I was hearing early in 2020. And I do think they took that in to the recording that they did for Lonely Trip with Scott and Tom and the writing. Like, you know, you can hear that, especially in I Never Needed You Like This Before, but I think so many of those songs are overlooked in Lonely Trip. And I think like that guitar like you said, crunchy or chunky, Jonathan. I just feel like a lot of that stuff is really represented in some of those songs on that album that I think is still very underrated. It's a really,
I totally agree.
So many good songs on that, but
so good.
Amazing to think about where that sound would have gone with Phish in 2020, because they were like,
I mean, I don't think it was good. I'm a big guy for not worrying about what ifs. I mean, it can be entertaining. The fact is, and Brian alluded to this, is that Phish was in a pretty good place when they played Mexico in 2020. And then the brakes were thrown on for them. And, you know, I can't speak to what the rest of the band members did all year long necessarily. But Trey,
we know what Trey
woodshedded. He worked. And he worked hard all year long. And we got some stuff. We got the Beacon Jams, which is huge. But all of that and whatever work or relaxation time off that the other band members had, all of that came back together in 21 and really is why 21 was such a gangbuster year. And
totally.
And we'll get to talk about that next week.
We would be remiss, just really quickly, not if we didn't highlight the Everything's Right from the following evening, which comes late in set one. It is outstanding. It is very much worth people's 18 minutes. There is a great video up on YouTube. This was the start of the early Sunday show. So I think that this started early in the evening, so it was sunny for the entire first set and even sunny going into the second set. Just a really cool vibe to watch from home. I'm sure really good vibe on site as well, but that Everything's Right. And then there's a golden age in the second set that is minimalistic and really weird and really cool, and highly recommend people check that out.
Can I say one thing about that first set,
please?
That was the first time that I had like went into the ocean during a Phish show, which I think I was in the ocean during Everything's Right. And then Matt told me later that Matt Dwyer, that we were back on the beach with them during the rest of the first set. And then he said that right when David Bowie started, I just turned around from talking to him and walked directly into the ocean again. And that was, and I didn't really remember that happening, but I believe him.
You also tried to convince me to go into the ocean in Mexico this year, but I didn't, but I appreciated you attempting.
It's a Sunday afternoon tradition at Mexico.
Maybe sometime.
Speaking of traditions, we have a tradition of continuing our 40 for 40 series.
Oh my God, it's going to go on?
Only for a little more bit. Only just a little bit more.
You guys are going to be carrying us forward into 2021, because I will be absent next week, but that actually means the conversation will probably be more interesting. So guys, what are we got two more
time
weeks.
Limit.
No shit, it's going to go 3 hours.
We got two more weeks. We do know some people who do podcasts for 3 hours, and they're all great. What do we have to look forward to for 2021? I mean, not specific show, but like, how are you feeling about this, Jonathan? It's on you. It's on your shoulders to bring us back from the pandemic.
Well, I can tell you what we're gonna do.
Oh wow,
we're gonna do the numbers show from Vegas.
Wow.
Oh, hell yes. Wow.
That's a show.
That's awesome.
That is a capital S-H-O-W show.
Oh, I'm so fucking excited.
That was good.
Great. Oh my God.
And
I had the most FOMO from that show that I've had in so long. That was,
well, I can tell you big. All was, about being there.
Yeah.
I was terrified for everyone in the venue watching that on the webcast. I was like, this is too good. This is not possible. Too good.
Well, Jonathan, I'm glad I'm going to miss that, because as you know, I came the next morning, so that's the one show that run that I missed.
I can tell everybody about having beers with RJ the next day in the sun in Vegas, and RJ going,
what did I do?
Oh well,
what did I do wrong? Well, okay, that's awesome. I'm excited for that. I will re-listen to it in honor of this. Anything else, guys, before we wrap up?
No, but grab tickets for our event on the 29th, because it's gonna be really fun. Come hang out with me, RJ.
And vote for your favorite tours in Phish history. Yep. Voting will go on for the next couple of weeks before we finalize all the details and start releasing those episodes. But keep voting. It's been fun seeing that come in.
Keep voting. Unlike in most countries, you can probably vote more than once.
The voting doesn't stop.
It does not
until
stop.
It does.
All right.
These are bad jokes. Very bad jokes. Sorry.
Just remember, if you pick summer 2020, your ballot gets thrown out.
Yeah,
this is true. This is true.
And don't believe everything you read on the internet, guys. All right.
Only some of it.
See you guys.
It's properly sourced.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Cyrus. Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.